is how does the host country, namely the United States in this case, would receive the third culture as a trend, as a whole? Is a third culture part of the mainstream, or it's part of the periphery, or it's something in between?
Well, after 9/11, especially for Arab Americans, it was a curse for us, but it was also a blessing because we became visible. People started to recognize that there are Arabs in the United States, whereas before they didn't recognize us. But the downside of it was that now we were all potential terrorists. But it let us at least be Arab Americans and practice our culture in public ways, and people would kind of recognize that we are here and that we exist. And so it was kind of a very strange dynamic of good and bad, like I think most things in life, including immigration.
Okay, let me come back to the original discussion that we had. Let me go to London once again. I started off the show with the experience of my friend, and that her choice of blending in the culture of mainstream was at the expense of she leaving her cultural identity. Is there someone there who can tell me about their experiences there in London of similar nature? Can you think of any?
The question, because it is a basic right, and everyone has the rights to live or to say what anything. Similarly, we are in a country, we belong to a religion, you have to practice your religion, and you have to do what you like it. And if it is very difficult, you have to change your policy.
But, okay, let me pose that question to yourself. Don't pass the microphone to anybody else. You're an immigrant from a country outside UK. I'm sure there comes a moment in your life experience there in the United Kingdom where you have to choose between maintaining your cultural identity, whether it's your interaction with your co-workers, your children, the society at large, and deciding to blend in the mainstream for the realities of success, whether it be getting a job or being accepted as part of the mainstream. My question to you is, first of all, do you have any experience yourself that you can share with our audience here in Tehran as well as Washington? And second of all, what would you in that scenario?
I've been here for a long time. I couldn't find any difference or difficulty or continuing my life living peacefully. There was no problem at all at the moment, for a long time.
Would you say you're an exception or a representative of a trend there?
A representative.
What is it?
I can mingle with everyone.
Okay, go ahead, someone in Washington.
What I have to say is that what I find is that the different states or governments around the world are basically failing us. One from the country where we come from, and one, and second, the country that is receiving us. One is, like in the case of the United States, and many of us who are from Latin America, the United States has been overthrowing governments right and left in Latin America. Yet, when we come into the United States legally gives itself the right to persecute immigrants throughout the United States, to launch deportations and to launch incarcerations of immigrants. Right now, Arizona just passed a law, which is the SB 1070, in which anyone who is suspected, in quotes, to look like an immigrant is going to be asked as to whether that person is legally able to live and stay in the United States or not. Otherwise, they will be incarcerated and they will be deported. As a consequence, there are millions of immigrants that are going to suffer the consequences.
But with all due respect, would you not say that this is the case where law and order of the host country and the realities of immigration are in contradiction with one another?
Mexicans, more than half of the United States, more than half of Mexico, rather, was taken from Mexico. Yet Mexicans have always been persecuted since the land was taken away. We're speaking of 1846-1848 war, in which the United States took the land away. Mexicans have always been persecuted. There were three things that the United States was supposed to respect. One was their culture, second was their language, and their property. Yet none have been respected, and up to now they're still being persecuted. We got to stop this.
Okay, someone had a viewpoint here in town. Go ahead.
Sorry. First of all, I would like to not to approve totally the extreme you mentioned, something regarding blending to the target culture and something preserving your own cultural specifications. Let's put it on the continuum. And I myself believe that there is within a culture there is a part a universality, which is shared by all different cultures. For example, the rules of traffic, the way we eat, that many things in the different cultures you see quite shared. That's the commonality of the culture. But there is a part which can be considered as the, if you just make an analogy, the same as the sea. So the depth is the universal aspects of the culture, but the surface is what the differential aspects in the different culture. So if you believe that, for example, a country, Muslim ladies are not allowed to take part in their schools, but they have to not to have hijab. So it seems that they are just focusing on that surface. So it doesn't mean that, if that country is democratic, if there is democracy there, so we can live in a way that respecting the human rights.
What can come in and say that you're very rhetorical? I mean, it sounds pretty and nice you speak of this.
I believe that, nowadays we can't say that, for example, America is the melting pot. Land of opportunity, everybody goes there, should be able to, or there is no way out, should be able to adapt himself or herself to that community. You see that many, American residents and dwellers, they're belonging to the different, forest countries or black, you find black speakers, Amerindians, many different,
So what's your point?
Community, but still they are living in that society because they believe in human rights. Whether the same is true,
but
for example, in India.
A gentleman here is complaining of the status of Hispanic rights there in the United States, especially with the whole anti-immigration law. One can come in and pretty much say this idea of common humanity.
So I believe that some aspects should be blended or maybe blended. We have to acculturate ourselves to some specification. At the same time, we are able to preserve our own cultural values.
Let me get the perspective of Washington. Go ahead.
Let me say one thing here. Let me turn the table. We all are talking about maybe France, America, and Canada. Where are the human rights and the civil rights of minorities and immigrants and illegal immigrants in the Arab and the Muslim world too? We have to address these. Where are the civil liberties of the Asian immigrants into Japan? We cannot just sit and chew on the American, the European, and the Canadian, forgetting about the rights of these immigrants also and their cultural identity, whether are they being respected, are they able to function, or they are hiding all the time and they are being treated as fourth-class citizens from Dubai all the way to the Atlantic Ocean. That is one thing I think we need to talk about, and let's talk about the whole world, not just one part of the world. I agree we have issues here in America, major issues with immigration. The federal government is standing against the Resolution 1070 down in Arizona. The U.S. government is suing the government of Arizona. What is being done for the immigrants, for the refugees in Lebanon, in Syria, the ones who were kicked out of Palestine, for example? That is forced immigration.
Thank you very much. Let me get a perspective of London. Go ahead.
I want to talk about myself. I'm immigrant on my right. However, I'm coming here like a student. I'm originally from Estonia. I think it's a great idea to move across the Europe. So it's just wonderful. But I think talking about myself, I'm Russian-speaking minority in Baltic countries, and there are a lot of issues between Estonians and Russians. And from history, Estonians, as I see it, look at the Russian-speaking as occupants. And so when I came to this country, I don't feel this discrimination towards in Estonia. I'm not immigrant there, but even you try to speak Estonian, they don't appreciate that. So I think it's I admire British people for their.
The Russian woman in London, she's going to find it a lot easier for her to blend in by virtue of the way she looks. It's kind of akin to the idea of racial passing and racial passage, whereas Caucasian, you know, phenotypically white immigrants are more successful in blending and assimilating than immigrants of color.
Thank you very much. Let me stop right here. I need to take a quick break and go to the link section. It's a new section that we've added to the link. It's a new surprise. Don't go away. Welcome to the link section of our program, where I'll link you with popular opinions in the cyber world on this subject. Some of you did send your emails, like Sakina Sogra, who expressed her concern over loss of cultural identity by the second generation of immigrants. In her email, she writes, "If an immigrant has a young one, she finds they begin to adopt the culture of that country, and hence their culture goes missing in their kids. These are some of the adverse effects of immigration." On our Facebook page, however, Jana Abdullahi from South Africa has a positive impression of immigration, viewing it as a means of exchanging human experiences. Oche Aoma from Texas, United States of America, is pessimistic like Sakina, saying maintaining cultural identity is almost impossible. He writes, "An African who travels to America, if from a primitive setup, will drop his African norms of wearing animal skin and pick up the idea of wearing silk or cotton. They forget to become fighters against the culture they once embraced. They turn back and an evil evolution takes place." Damien Aranda from Phoenix, United States, does not denounce these views, but believes that media is to blame for perpetuating racist stereotypes about immigrants. The post goes, "I know the immigration issue is publicly hyped in xenophobic minds via the internet, television, and word-of-mouth propaganda." Seems like people are full of stories on immigration. Well, if you're interested in more stories on the experience of U.S. immigrants, you can log into www.myimmigrationstory.com, where you can read plenty of immigrants' real stories. If you want to hear what UK immigrants have to say, go to movinghere.org.uk, click on stories. Tons of interesting stuff. Now, going to the Persian blogosphere, I came across some interesting posts, like this one, www.byebyecanada.blogspot.com, where the author tries to provide potential Iranian immigrants with a realistic understanding of the country of their destination. Well, these are the views expressed on the net. Now let's check out what we're discussing next week. They say the era of the New Labour is over, with Cameron becoming the Prime Minister of Britain. Does that mean anything when it comes to UK foreign policy towards Middle East? For that, Nagis Mobalighi will link you with our global audiences in Tehran, with audiences in Kabul, as well as London. It's going to be an interesting show. Make sure you tune in. But why don't you link in yourself as well? Go to www.presstv.ir/thelink and join our discussion forum there. You can also add us on Skype. The.link2 is our Skype account. Add us, we'll record your views and run it in the show. We've got the SMS polling system up and running as well. The question that we're asking is the following. How do you see UK-US relations under the new British government? Send star number 1 if you think a special relationship will improve. Send star number 2 if you think there'll be a more independent UK stance. And send star number 3 if you think there'll be no change. Our SMS number is 0044-762-480-6179. Take part in the poll and be charged at your local rating. Let's go for the recap of the news hour. I'll be back with the link.
top stories this hour. The leaders of Iran, Turkey and Brazil are meeting to discuss the details of a nuclear swap deal. Turkey's prime minister came to Tehran late last night to take part in this meeting. He's also planning to attend the G15 summit as a special guest. Air travel in Europe has once again been disrupted by volcanic ash from Iceland. A thick ash cloud has grounded dozens of flights in northern England, Scotland and Ireland. Last month, European air traffic was almost completely shut down when the same Icelandic volcano erupted. Millions of passengers were stranded. In Thailand, tensions are mounting as the government has rejected talks with the opposition. 3 days of street battles in Bangkok have claimed at least 33 lives. This as troops continue to besiege protesters camped out in the capital. Authorities have also declared a state of emergency in five other provinces. Kuwait's Emir Sheikh Sabah Al Ahmad Al Jaber is on a two-day visit to Syria. He's met with Syrian President Bashar al-Assad in Damascus. The two leaders discussed a range of issues, including the situation in the occupied Palestinian territories. They called for Arab solidarity to counter growing regional challenges. And dozens of endangered golfina turtles have been found dead on Mexico's Acapulco beach. Environmentalists suspect the finding may be linked to similar phenomena on nearby beaches. Authorities are investigating whether the deaths may have been caused by humans. Initial autopsy reports indicate the turtles drowned.
Welcome back to the second half of The Link here on Press TV. Linking Up is the name of this section where we try to get a little more analytical on our discussion. The question that we posed in this show today was, do you blend in the culture of mainstream or you remain proud in preserving your cultural identity? In the first half, our discussion went off different tangents. To bring the discussion together, let's watch a clip of film called Crash, directed by Paul Haggis in 2004. And we'll come back. We'll use that section of the film to go on with the rest of our conversation.
You get one free box of ammunition. What kind do you want?
Chugov? Ammunition chiye?
Porsi chajur gulule mikhain?
Che midonam aghe ki andazesh mishe?
Chanjur daran, chiyo mikhain?
Man che midonam aghe to hala tufang nakharidam ke dokhtar?
Pas ma in behtarin dalile ke tufang nakharim.
De, dobare shuru kardi ya? In che tarz harf zadane?
Yo, Osama! Plan the jihad on your own time. What do you want?
رجب جهاد چی گفتی؟
مزخرف حرف میزنه بهش گوش نکنین.
Are you making insult at me?
Am I making insult at you? Is that the closest you can come to English?
Yes, I speak English. I am an American citizen.
Oh God, here we go.
I have right like you. I have right to buy gun.
Not in my store, you know. Andy, get him out of here now.
Dad, go wait in the car.
Now, get out.
Hey, Matt, keep your shoe behind.
Get him out of here.
You're an ignorant man.
Come on. Get out.
Okay. No, don't touch me. He cheated me.
Andy, now.
Yeah,
let's go.
Come on. Ebenezer, okay.
You can give me the gun or give me back the money. And I'm really hoping for the money.
What kind of ammunition do you want?
Whatever fits.
Oh, we got a lot of kinds. We got long Colts, short Colts, ball heads, flat nose, hollow point.
Section of The Crash, produced in 2004, popular film that it was. I'm going to use this clip to, in fact, pose a question of this show, something that we've actually not quite paid enough attention to. When she gets involved, she gets ahead with what she wants. When the man in not so much fluent English is trying to buy a gun, he's not that successful. What do you make out of this clip, Hamid?
This is the reality. This is exactly what Hollywood wants us to believe. Because Hollywood is the media in North America. And what the generation, what the new generation, the old generation watches on TV is based upon what Hollywood wants us to believe. So when Hollywood makes a film like this, they want us to think that this is exactly how it's happening. Now, is it happening like this? Or is it that
they want us to believe this? Or is it that the Zionists want us to actually think that we have to lose our culture, we have to go out, buy guns, we have to believe that some guy, it's okay for him to say jihad and for him to call us Osamas and for him to disrespect our prophet and disrespect our religion because it sit on a film, which was a very popular film.
But one can argue that this is quite the reality on the ground. If you don't speak proper English, if you don't blend into the values of the mainstream, you're going to get rejected. But if you come in as part of them sort of scenario, you are quite accepted. I mean, we can go ahead with these sort of approach and say this is a Zionist project and whatnot, but you cannot deny the fact that this is the reality on the ground. And this is what I'm trying to get ahead with this show. What does this clip signify to you?
It signifies to me that if you can speak English properly, if you look like an immigrant, they're going to treat you like an outsider. That's what it signifies to me. But what it wants to signify to other people is that everyone should act like that. If they make a film that someone comes and can speak English properly, and the guy accepts him as an American citizen and doesn't call him Osama, doesn't disrespect his religion, then everybody else will copy.
Let me go to Washington as the host country where these sort of incidents would take place. I see a lot of hands being raised. Gentlemen at the very back, go ahead.
Yeah, I think that it's good that we look at the effect on the immigrant, quote-unquote, of our policies of different countries. But we must also look at the cause, because the essential reason for this policy is the cause that produced it. I would say that when you look at the policy today, the reason people immigrate to the U.S., to Europe, etc., is because of European and Western world's culture of war and its capitalism and imperialism. I think that once you begin to understand that, these smaller issues that arises because you have to go to another country, because you have to find a job, because there's no money, your country is being exploited, your labor is worth nothing, that then we begin to see what we can do and what we must do to change these policies.
You spoke of immigration policies. What is the primary motive of countries like the United States and UK in allowing immigrants in their country?
I want to talk actually about the root cause. What's missing in this immigration debate is what he's saying is the root cause, not the symptom. Immigration is the symptom of economic immigration as well as political immigration from persecution when they're supporting, as he was saying, right-wing governments in Latin America. And one key point that affects me as someone who works in development is the brain drain. And I think it's the responsibility both of the country that people are fleeing from economically to not let a brain drain happen, as well as richer countries and development organizations like I work for, to make sure students go to university in their home country, not just flee to the US and go to university there and then never go back to help their own country. Because I think in the end, we want everyone to stay in their own country if they can and not have to flee their country for economic mobility.
Okay, you're quite active in the immigration scene. My question was that I proposed to that gentleman sitting at the back was, what do you think is the primary motive of certain countries like the United States as well as UK and Canada allowing immigrants to their country? How does the host country benefit by allowing immigrants to their country?
This country belonged to the Native Americans, and certain people immigrated to this country because of the resources that exist in this country, and they came to rape the resources. And in coming to do that, they ended up staying because they had superior weapons, they control the country, and today they now talk about a policy for the original owners of the country to visit their own country, to come across their own quote-unquote borders. Where do these borders come from?
Let me go to UK. I'm interested in UK's perspective on this. How does the general society as a whole, the mainstream that is called, view immigrants as a whole? Is there sort of monolithic definition of what immigrant community is like, or is in fact quite shattered across the spectrum?
I think that the whole immigration system has altered a great deal in the current era. I'm a Jew, and my family came over here some 150 years ago, but we were immigrants then, and I think we played our part for the country, which is where the benefits come in. My father was in the trenches in the First Boer. I was in the RAF. In the as they came, my forefathers, they had a tough time at the start, but they looked to the future and they wanted to come here for their children and their grandchildren. And I think if that is the wish of the immigrants, then they might have to put up with what is considered a hard time today, but they certainly should be allowed to retain their faith, as I have, and live a normal, happy life.
We're talking about the question of cultural identity in this particular show. You came to the United Kingdom as a Jewish person, a devout Jewish person. Can you tell me about your experience and the second and third generation in your family? How Jewish do you think your children, as well as grandchildren, are going to be?
That is a very good question, and I cannot say that I think that my grandchildren are going to be as detailed religious as I am, but I do feel that they will always accept the fact that they are Jewish and be proud of it. But whether they're going to live in an old-fashioned lifestyle of perhaps not eating pork or things like that, I can't say.
Let me get a perspective of gentleman there raising his hand in Washington.
Yeah, I just want to address the whole idea of blending and, you know, the decision-making. You know, some individuals, based on their appearance, their physical appearance, or their racial composition, you know, have the ability to blend or pass in society, whereas individuals who, you know, are more conspicuously, you know, ethnic or immigrant, you know, black and brown people, don't have that ability. So in the States, you have third and fourth, and even fifth generation Americans of African, Latino, even Middle Eastern descent, who still cannot blend and still cannot pass because by virtue of the way they look, or by virtue of their ostentatious representation of their faith, or by their name. So the whole idea or notion of blending, I think, is more nuanced and is more complicated for individuals who look a certain way, speak a certain way, and believe a certain way.
But I'm not quite sure what you mean exactly by that. Can you give me explicit example of what you mean exactly by that?
I'll give you an example. So in my instance, I was born abroad but raised in the States. I don't speak with an accent, I don't think, you know. I wear baseball caps. I think I'm as American as, you know, a white guy from Kansas. However, when I go to the airport, they see my name as being Khalid Beydoun. My ability to blend is eliminated. I mean, at that instant, I become a minority. I become somebody who's on the fringe.
Okay, what do you think is the root cause of all that before I go to London?
The root cause is racism. I think that, you know, what's underbelying the whole idea of the immigration debate is xenophobia and racism, whereas individuals who look a certain way are embraced, and individuals who don't look a certain way are rejected or vilified.
Let me get the perspective of that gentleman in London. I'll come to Tehran and I'll end this section of the show. Go ahead.
My feeling of this is that even though, like, this show might be talking about cultural assimilation, you can't really deny that there's a huge economic element behind it, in the sense that the economic performance, at least in the UK, it seems to be quite inversely proportionate to the focus that people are having, a lot of people are having, on the whole immigration issue.
So the economic reason being one of the factors for the host countries to allow immigrants in their country. Let's talk of the original countries who send a lot of immigrants to different countries. Would you say there has to be certain policies in the countries, in the original countries, that immigration is quite a trendy mode there? Should Iran, for example, have certain immigration policies for those who are considering to immigrate to abroad, or that would just be restriction for citizens? Go ahead.
They make people that feel that here is not comfortable. They make people that there there are more opportunities for them. But I want to live in a country that if I get something, if I get comfort, if I get money, I want to share it with my people, the people who I love. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that if I get money...
Go ahead.
You mean that we have to, for example, propose some policies against immigration or maybe due to immigration? You mean this?
Either or. Because the reality on the ground is that the host countries are very concerned about this thing called immigration because it's part of their sort of national narrative. And they have quite sophisticated laws on immigration and immigration policies. My question to you is, do you think original countries like Iran and Turkey and India, for example?
I got the point. So, in my opinion, any country, for example, Iran, we have a lot of students, a lot of educated guys, and if we don't prepare a good condition for them, we're going to lose them. In my opinion, we're not supposed to restrict them. We are supposed to make a new environment for them. For example, for the graduates, we need to make some job opportunities for them. We need to make everything on its position, make, for example, everything on its place to be sure that a student have a job opportunity, have, for example, a marriage opportunity, something like this. If we do make the environment better, we may decrease the amount of immigration to Western countries or something like this.
Thank you very much. Let me get your perspective, Fagwa London. Go ahead.
To put it in another way, we can say that we have two kind of immigration. So optional immigration and maybe obligatory immigration. In case of optional immigration, we send some students, some, for example, scholars, to abroad, to overseas, to get some, for example, experiences, some more advanced courses, and return back. In the case of other, I mean, obligatory immigration, we send, for example, some traffickers, maybe some smuggler, for facilitating the relationship with other countries. Go ahead, and the only difference between these two groups is that the rate of returning back to, for example, original country from the recipient is the matter of discussion, because they second group never back to Iran, for example.
Thank you very much. Let me get a perspective of that lady there in London who was from Russia. Go ahead, and we'll conclude this section of the show. Go ahead.
I would like to turn the discussion between about immigration and integration. And my question is, would you like to live in a multinational country or a single national country?
Do you want to live in a multinational country or do you want to live in a single national country? This is the question that we're going to be discussing in the next section of the show called Linked. But in the meantime, let's check out what has been discussed so far. I'll be right back.
Even though like this show might be talking about cultural assimilation, you can't really deny that there's a huge economic element behind it.
When in Rome, do as the Romans do.
I decided I'm not changing my accent. Given the kind of work I do, I know some immigrants from Africa who change their accents.
I admire British people for their tolerance.
You know, the Russian woman in London, she's going to find it a lot easier for her to blend in by virtue of the way she looks.
So we really experience this third culture in these areas where there's lots of immigrants who have family support, who have the community support for each other, and don't have to change their values as much because they have that network of support of people they know and people they trust of the same background.
They find me amusing sometimes because my ideas were kind of maybe balanced out by living in the West and being still an Iranian woman. So sometimes they find me more interesting.
We have to believe that some guy, it's okay for him to say jihad and for him to call us Osamas and for him to disrespect our prophet and disrespect our religion because it sit on it. On a film.
Religion is pretty important to many people, so each individual has to make their own choice. That's my view.
And you know that Islamic culture is not against the human rights. For example, having hijab. Do you think that it bothers others?
And one key point that affects me is the brain drain, and I think it's the responsibility both of the country that people are fleeing from to not let a brain drain happen, as well as richer countries and development organizations like I work for, to make sure students go to university in their home country, not just flee to the US.
If we do make the environment better, we may decrease the amount of immigration to Western countries or something like this.
The reason people immigrate to the US, to Europe, etc., is because of European and Western world's culture of war and its capitalism and imperialism.
Linked is the name of this section of The Link, where people ask each other questions without my interference. Let's just start off with the gentleman in London. He had one question to propose to our audience here in Tehran. Go ahead.
Would you say that the word racism is a malused, malused category?
Let me pose that question to Washington. Is racism not perceived quite accurately? Go ahead.
Properly, because we know racism exists. People are discriminated against because of their race, because of what they look. I don't think it is realistic to deny that it exists. Of course, sometimes, like any other word or concept, it can be sometimes misused. But to deny that racism exists, I think, flies in the face of common sense, flies in the face of all our experiences. Racism does exist. But Barack Obama was asked why he calls himself black because his mother is white, and he said, because when I'm standing there and the taxi will not pick me up, they are practicing racism against me. So it's not correct that racism doesn't exist. It exists very well.
But to make this more nuanced a little bit, I want to say I think racism intersects with classism, really. And when we're talking about Indians that come to the U.S., they are less discriminated against as immigrants than, say, someone from Mexico, because their jobs are usually doctors and they're not the lower class jobs. On the other hand, Indians that are working in the Gulf countries, like Saudi Arabia or Kuwait, they are discriminated against because they're taking the lower class jobs. So really, it's an element of racism that's intersected with classism.
Thank you very much. No. Let me ask the gentleman there who had one question to pose to our Tehran audience, the gentleman with the suit there.
Let me say this about the lady is saying that Indians are not discriminated against as much as others. The first casualties after 9/11 were American Indians, a Sikh, who had a turban on his head, and he was killed because he was an Asian. So I think it is there. Sorry, you know, you spoke. Let me finish, and then you can answer. He was killed because he was Indian, and that was a racist thing, and they did not even understand what an Indian is, what an Arab is, or a Muslim is. Only it, because of the crime. Yes, there was a crime, but there was racism directed against Indians.
Racism directed towards Indians. Go ahead with your response.
There's an element of the political racism against Arabs, against Indians, all of these things. But I just think when we're talking about a lot of the racism, when it's economically based, it is intersected with class.
Okay, thank you very much. Let me ask the gentleman there sitting at the front who had one question to pose to our Tehran audience. Go ahead.
My question for everyone in Tehran and everyone in the audience there is, have you thought about leaving Iran? And if so, why? Why would you want to leave? What are the costs and the benefits? What are the things that you would hope for if you did decide to leave? Or if you just want to stay, you know, does immigration not come into your mind at all?
What's the response right here? Go ahead.
I want to leave Iran. The first thing is about the management. And, I originally come from Singapore. And I feel that I don't belong here because there are lots of things in Iran that I feel that is just based on Iranian culture and it's not international.
Thank you very much. I only have 1 minute. Let's have one question posed to our London guest. Go ahead. Ask London.
The question is that do you think that some sort of westernization or Americanization is in process nowadays or not?
Let me pose that question to Washington. Is westernization or Americanization one of the reasons why immigration is encouraged?
Inside the United States, people come because they have to. And they come because they're economic migrants. However, I think that part of this economic migration is caused by the culture of war that exists in the U.S. and the West.
Thank you very much. This is as much time we had for this edition of The Link here on Press TV. Send us your questions or comments to the link at presstv.ir. Until next time, goodbye.